Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Buchanan Report, this 23rd day of April, 2019. My name is Ivan Buchanan, and I am your host, and my co-host, as always, Ron Hanks and Rhonda Moon Lane. If you're joining us for the first time, our call-in number is 347-857-1710. Again, that number, 347-857-1710. And for those of you that do call in, please watch the language. We try to keep it as clean as we can. Our guests tonight are two guys been on our show before, whistleblowers Greg Childs and Tim Petowski. They're calling in with updates on their cases. They're former law enforcement for VA, or I believe, wait a minute, one,
yeah,
or they're either current or former VA police. Yes,
yeah.
Boy, am I doing good tonight, huh? But before we get to our guests here, I want to remind everyone that our website is thebuchananreport.com. Again, thebuchananreport.com. Tons of links for you to go to. Check out your doctors. Make sure they say the specialists. You can check them out. Make sure that they are, and et cetera. Tons of links on there to help our veterans out there. Again, thebuchananreport.com. Ronnie, you got anything?
I do. This has nothing to do with VA. We were talking about this just before the show. A 70-year-old lady fell in the Grand Canyon today from her death, and I mentioned this is the third or fourth in the last month, and Ron said, yeah, how about those ones that are taking their selfies and falling? So I did open the story, and one of them did fall while attempting to take a selfie from the rim. So you were right, Ron.
Fools.
I don't know about the 70-year-old. I doubt she was taking a selfie, but...
Well, that's all I can say. I just, if you look at today's age, everybody's got to take a picture of themselves.
Yep.
My picture's been on the post office wanted list for so long, I don't want it taken.
Still hanging up on the post office, is it?
Yeah, I move it to the back every time I go in there.
Good idea. I said save ya.
I hung one of Rhonda up in Vegas the other day, so.
Well, I haven't been there in a long time. It can't be me.
No, I hung it up.
Well, okay. You hung it up. I would believe that.
I guarantee it's you. I guarantee it's you.
You would do that. All right. I got it.
If I could get away with it.
News release. You could.
Okay.
They'd take it back down. I got a news release today, late this afternoon. I did post it on both Facebook pages, that VA ensures veterans have same-day access to emergency mental health care. I'm not going to read it to you because it's on Facebook, so you guys can go read it. They are providing 24/7 access to mental health crisis. I hope it does, too. They actually have a national strategy for preventing veteran suicides. I haven't gone in and looked at that yet, but I will before next week. We'll see what that is. I know they are changing some of the things they're doing. They're actually working with...
are they actually answering the phone?
You know, a lot of that is going to vendors. I was reading one of the stories I had saved a few weeks ago. And now a lot of those calls are going to vendors, so they're not leaving it up to the VA to answer the phone. So that may help.
Good.
I don't know. I know the one group I'm in, Veterans to Veterans, you see a lot of people in there that are feeling kind of desperate. They always give them that number, and I have always, for a response, put in, check the Buchanan Report's homepage, because of the page that we have with all the different numbers, there is a number there you can reach someone. And
yes.
A lot of people have appreciated it, so there's an option there too.
When I was posting today on Veteran to Veteran, there was a post. Everybody has put their phone numbers there, so if you're in crisis,
yes.
There's that. When I last looked, there was 85 phone numbers there of people that will answer the phone. So there are options.
Good.
And one of the short ones, Morris, remember, bring Murphy home, his,
yep.
The veteran, he passed away. Unfortunately, they didn't get Murphy home yet, but they're still looking for him. In fact, Clear Choice, they're the ones that do the billboards alongside the freeway.
Uh-huh.
They have donated that space to her. There's already one in Las Vegas. I guess they've donated it across the United States, so they still want to bring
wow.
it home.
Good. Good.
Well, you stop to think about it. I think someone has taken Murphy and
yes.
has no intention of returning him.
Yeah. So, pretty much that's what everyone says. I agree. That was it. That's all I have. That's all.
Okay. Well, I only have one item, and it's not really a news article. It is just an update. As of last Wednesday, I had my first VA appointment with the Grand Junction VA. And as it stands right now, I will give them a very good score. I got in there, everything happened on time. The people were pleasant. There is a police uh-huh. presence. They did not stand there looking over my shoulder or anything that way. I did not hear any code greens or anything like that going on. The whole thing was good. They've been excellent. I've been almost overwhelmed with phone calls, setting up appointments for all the different things
uh-huh.
they're trying to do for me. So we'll just see how it goes from there.
I wasted my money. I got paid $50 to have you messed with down there and throw you out.
Yeah,
if possible. I guess I think they didn't get to you in time.
They took the money and went home.
They obviously did.
Yes.
No, that's good news. That's good news.
You know, I have had great experiences at the VA 99%
yeah.
of the time.
Well, you know, I got to thinking about it, all the bad experiences that we have heard about and interviewed and whatnot. It just felt like I needed to report that.
Yeah.
Yep. It's nice to hear something good. And we've said it, you know, we've been kind of criticized from time to time about everything we have is negative, and that seems to be about the only thing that people come to us on. And what's in out there in the news media, that's about all there is. But there is some good things happening out there, too. And we've said it. You give us some good stuff. We'll talk about it. And,
that's it.
So.
I do
all
have
right.
Jim waiting in the blue room.
All right, well, let's get ready to bring them on. This is the Buchanan Report. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll be speaking with whistleblower Greg Childs and Tim Pertowski. We'll be back here in one moment.
I didn't think he'd kill everything exploded.
Thank you for listening to the Buchanan Report radio show. Our guests tonight are whistleblowers Tim Potoski, Greg Childs, and Goose are also supposed to be calling in, but I know Tim's the only one on right now. Good evening, Tim. How are you tonight?
I'm doing pretty good. Am I coming in okay?
Okay, he did put you live. Yeah, you're the only one that's called in so far.
I'll have to tease the other two about it.
I'm going to. I'm doing that right now on Messenger.
Nice.
So what's been going on with your case?
Quite a bit. The OAWP spontaneously closed my case with them as essentially unfounded. And there's two significant portions there. The first is that there was an administrative investigation board in 2015 that found for the whistleblower reprisal that I complained to OAWP about. My complaint to OAWP was to give the VA its chance to do the right thing. So the Office of Special Counsel also got involved on that, and they attempted to broker an agreement between me and the agency, but the agency just wanted to pay me money. They didn't want to agree to fix anything. And so my attorneys have that at MSPB. So OAWP's claim flies in the face of both OSC's investigation and an independent, unrelated administrative investigation board. And so I asked Bruce Oliver's the investigator from OAWP, and I just asked him directly in an email, how did you find for no retaliation after two other entities did? And he just wouldn't answer my question. So I suspect that it's an attempt by the agency to gain some sense of denial so that they can come back and say, well, OAWP investigated Tim's claim and nothing went on, right? Just in spite of the AIB and in spite of OSC's investigation.
Quick question, if I could, Tim.
Ivan,
here. Are you currently your current police officer or former police officer?
No, I'm current. They haven't fired me yet. They've tried several times, but they haven't got me yet. They're coming after. So Goose, myself, Greg Childs, John Moline, our cases are interrelated. I'm not sure if I'm the oldest whistleblower or if Goose is. We're kind of neck and neck there. But it's no accident that Goose was terminated when Goose was terminated, that they've come after Greg and the time they've come after Greg, and that John Moline's case is languishing in the way it's languishing. And they're coming after me. As you and I speak, we're supposed to go through an inspection from central office. And the guy that they're sending out to do the inspection is a man named Keith Lamb. Now, Keith Lamb is the guy that falsified the records to get Goose terminated. And I filed both an OIG complaint and a complaint with OAWP, which was, of course, referenced to OSP, because OSP has oversight over central office, related to Lamb's falsifications. So it's beyond, because Goose's attorney sent me his investigation. I'm a trained instructor for the VA, so many of the things that Lamb is alleging for Goose, I can speak directly to those policies and procedures. So Lamb's actions go beyond, I don't know how to describe it. The VA always wants to put in its proper adjectives to somehow, take some steam out of it. But the fact of the matter is, Lamb said that Goose did things that he just simply didn't do, and the evidence is in Lamb's own report. But that's the guy they're sending out to Seattle to do our inspection. So make no mistake, it's a hatchet job, and they're coming after me and my supervisor, which is fine. Like I've mentioned, it's not too unusual. And my pattern of practice for the last decade has simply been do what's right, document it, make sure you meticulously document it. Most people kind of mess that part up, but they're going to lie about it, right? So eventually when they drop paper on it, their stories aren't going to match up. But if you've been doing the right thing and been documented, yours will. And stuff always comes up sideways, right? So one instance, like when they passed me over for the position I'm in right now, the Chief Esters, who is the temporary chief of police here, the selecting official decided that I would be the guy to get the job. And she wasn't the selecting official. When she found out that they had selected me, she wrote an email to Barbara Neveretti, who's the head of HR, asking her how to unselect me for the job. Well, somebody, I don't know who, down in HR, or IT maybe, they kept that email. Because these things disappear hand over fist, right? So I have a copy of that email because somebody down there, somebody whom I don't know, made sure it didn't disappear and got into the hands of OSC. So, and that's sort of come up time and again. There's a lot of folks who are afraid for their jobs at the VA, but they also want something done about the out of control agency that we work for. So, you know, stay the course, keep your eyes on the North Star, and then as things develop, their lies will be proven as lies. And that's what's going to happen in Goose's case. What Keith Lem did was absolutely reprehensible. And we can verify that because Keith Lem is of the intelligent variety that he didn't expunge or even attempt to doctor the rest of the evidence he put in his own case findings, right? Like, for example, he accused Goose of applying state charges to this issue with this gal who parked in a place she shouldn't have parked. Well, the United States District Court violation notice is in his own report. So you don't write a USDCVN for a state charge. So Lamb's own statement that Goose stepped outside the bounds of his authority is disproven in Lamb's own case. So we'll see what he does when he comes out here and what kind of shenanigans that they put to paper. But we'll just tear it apart like we've done for years now.
And his reasoning is over a parking space?
Yeah, Goose was terminated because he wrote a lady a ticket. That's what it boils down to. She had an expired placard, and she knew the placard was expired, and, you know, she was and it was from a different state as well. Goose noticed, contacted her. She got verbally abusive with him. And so Goose's response to that was to follow the procedures, as is often the case with folks like that. I was trying to be reasonable with you, but if we've got to go this other route, then here's your citation. And by the way, I need to confiscate the placard because it's expired and it doesn't belong to you. It belongs to the state of Arizona. So Lamb stated that Goose stole her property and then doesn't specify that the only property he's talking about is the placard. Goose had a detective come out and observe him enter the lady's car, or her vehicle, which she'd given him the keys for, and watch him only take the placard, not go through the vehicle or any other kind of shenanigans. And Lamb puts that in his report, but then in his case findings, he states that the investigation revealed that Goose took the property. Well, of the nine people he interviewed, one was Goose, one was the complainant. Of the seven other people, the only other person who was there to even see it was the detective, and the detective's statement states clearly that all Goose did was remove the placard. So,
which is VA property anyway.
Well, the state of Arizona, it was a state-issued parking decal.
I see.
But yes, it belongs to the state in any event, correct? Yeah. So it's and then that relates to the thing with OAWP and their statement that there was no reprisal in my case in the light of two other agencies that, that said as much. The VA is truly out of control. And so for the last decade or so, we've kind of found ourselves into these difficult conversations with people where we try to present the facts to them, but they're so cartoonish that if you're not I've never been exposed to that kind of stuff. Most people's initial reaction is, you know, Tim, you got to be making this up, right? It's that nobody would do that. That's silly.
Yeah.
I'll interject real quick. I put Goose on live, so Goose is on there live.
Oh,
with
good.
You now too. So, okay.
Hey, brother, how you doing? I've been talking about you.
Yeah, I can hear you talking about me.
Everybody's ears are burning.
Oh, everything that he said good about me is all false. I'm telling you right now.
He kind of mumbled that.
No, I said everything he said that's good about me is all false.
he hates living up to people's expectations.
Right.
Goose, I don't know how much you caught. We were just kind of going over the blatant shenanigans.
No, I just came on right now about 1-2 minutes ago.
Gotcha.
I had the wrong time set up on my phone, so that was on me. But I caught the fact that you were mentioning about a Lamb as the investigation, how he indicated that I did, in fact, allegedly, search her vehicle, despite the fact having a witness who saw me not search the vehicle and stated the same in the investigation.
Right. Yeah. And that's what we were talking about, is how blatant that the VA gets with some of these determinations when they go to cover things up. They don't even cover it up well, you know, or try to anyway.
Yeah.
They're not worried about it.
No, they're not. No, you hit the nail right on the head. When you've been doing something for decades and nobody punishes you for it, why would you? Why would you worry about trying to make it look good?
And that's almost every whistleblower we have talked to has said the same thing. They're not worried about their jobs. What's going to happen?
No, they offered
absolutely
me
nothing.
Yeah. Well, they offered me a bunch of money. And that was my response to him.
Yes.
It's like, why do I did all this because I want it fixed. You know, why do I want to take money from the VA? Arguably, by the way, that money might be used for somebody's medical care, at least hypothetically, right? Why would I want to take that money when my whole point was to get you guys to do the right thing?
Exactly. Yeah. Whistleblowers are the ones doing the right thing.
Right.
99% have valid complaints.
Yeah. Oh, I agree.
Well, what you've just described gives a whole new meaning to, I don't like what's happening here. I'm going to take my ball and go home.
Right.
Right. Well, and, you know, if you went back to the, and I know I sent you guys the 2015 AIB at one point, there's a large number of conclusions, and I apologize. It's easy to get overwhelmed with the amount of documentation, but the conclusions range from a determination from everything from racial discrimination, abuse of authority, whistleblower reprisal, of course, gross mismanagement, and almost everything on there has gone unaddressed. In total, or there's been a couple things where they've managed to get a couple of kind of half-hearted fixes in, but it's been 4 years. It's been 4 years, and the radios still don't work. Rob Abbott, who was an officer who worked for us, was injured so bad he'll never be a cop again. We couldn't find him because he was screaming over the old radios, and 4 years later, they still don't have the radios fixed.
Wow.
Go ahead, Goose. Go ahead.
So one problem that I personally found as an issue with the AIBs, and this has been told to me on three different occasions, and I can say that because I personally have survived three AIBs. the VA will not provide you an unredacted copy of the full context of the AIB unless they are explicitly taking action against you. And I have been unsuccessful over the years, even through EEOs and through other avenues, to get a copy of any of those three AIBs that I was subjected to, and the VA will not release those. So even if, at least in my case, where it was verbally relayed to me that all my complaints in the past, outside the scope of my current issues, have been substantiated and I was exonerated from those past issues, they still will not give me any of that information, because there was no action that was being proposed or taken against me at all. And several of those issues from within the AIBs, even to date, have not been addressed and have not been corrected. And those matters date back to 2010 and 2011.
19 years ago.
At least at the Los Angeles.
Or 9 years ago. Yeah.
And I have an unredacted copy of a 2012 AIB, but they released it to me by accident. I think their intent was to mess with me, and they put it on a web-based server for me to download, and then they closed it right away, so I only had this little window of time to actually get the information off the site. And they uploaded the wrong document. They uploaded the unredacted one. And then they tried to get it back. They accused me of a violation of law and several other things. But anybody who's read the Sunshine Act knows that that body of law was engineered for issues, you know, concerning the nation. We might not want things disclosed from the federal government to the public that our enemies might find useful. Well, what the heck does a hospital have that Russia is going to be interested in? Right, there's nothing in those AIBs that fall under the scope of that retention need, and so ultimately they didn't get their unredacted copy back, and they've been unsuccessful at any of the allegations that they've leveled towards me along those lines. But it was by accident. The only reason I have it is because they messed up.
The other interesting thing about AIBs, especially with like recent AIBs that have taken place for other individuals such as Greg Childs, for example. I personally had contact with one of the board members who was on the AIB, and for whatever reason, he decided to get, you know, very, he had the verbal diarrhea, if you will, where he started telling me a lot about the case and things involving his case, where he straight up told me that Greg was effed in the whole process regarding his complaints. And that he personally recommended for his chain of command, who were subjected to the AIB, which I believe was chief and deputy chief, that they are not returned to duty. But nonetheless, they were still returned to duty. And then now he's having more diarrhea of the mouth talking to others with regards to cases involving John and Greg. And he just can't seem to stop talking. And this individual who was on Greg's AIB is one of the accused by John Moline regarding misconduct on his part. So at no point, even if something is substantiated, at least as it has been very evident to me with my experiences, does the VA actually make any attempt to correct those issues? Now, there's a mandate that was recently created that anybody who's been founded of retaliation against a whistleblower, that they are subject to disciplinary action. There's a mandate to take disciplinary action against that individual. The problem is that they can turn around and give them a written letter of counseling and say, hey, yeah, we disciplined them, but we gave them a written letter of counseling or a reprimand. But that does nothing to fix the issue, because you're keeping the person who's now been founded to be engaged in retaliatory activity in the same position and giving them the opportunity to continue their behavior. You're not correcting it by demoting them, removing them, or even substantially affecting them with a significant type of disciplinary action, such as a 30-day suspension.
And I would argue, actually, that it's also a kind of tacit approval of their reprisal activity, because there is a standard table of penalties that's supposed to be attached to what Goose is talking about. The first, it's a 1-2-3 strike, you're out. The first is a permanent letter of reprimand that goes in your EOPF file. The second is days without pay. And then the third is termination. So when they give somebody a lesser penalty and then claim that they've already been penalized, what they're doing is they're sending a signal to that person, look, we'll protect you. You know, you just keep doing what you're doing, you know, because that temporary reprimand, that's going to go away in a number of days. They're just going to reach into their file, pull it out, and tear it up, and it goes away. And we have a history of, the agency, the VA, has a history of hiring or selecting people that they know are going to be that way. There's a chief of police named Jeff Hader out of Spokane who had his license, if you will, I'm using that term loosely, to be a law enforcement officer in the state of Washington revoked because he was having sex on duty. That's public record. He was he worked for Benton County when it happened. Well, why did the VA hire Jeff Hader? Right? They hired him because they know about this bit of his past, and they know that if they retain him as a law enforcement officer, they're going to do what he's going to do what they tell him to do. Right? It's the only reason why they retained him. Has to be. That part I'm looking into a crystal ball, I suppose. But we can see the pattern of practice that Goose is talking about over and over and over again. Right?
Yeah.
And just to add on a little bit to that, all of these also fall under, like, I guess, the legal guideline of negligent retention. So it's
right.
Simple for, let's just say, hypothetically here, let's say I was employed at the San Diego VA, and then I got terminated. And then let's just say a year later, I got hired by the Salt Lake City, Utah VA. And then I started, and then I'm having issues there. I transfer before anything can come down on me to Las Vegas VA. And then again, I have the same issues again. And then I transfer from there and I run to Fort Harrison, Montana. And then I start having issues there. And then I run to West LA. The way the VA looks at it, they don't look at it as like, hey, this is an employee of the agency of the Veteran Affairs Department. They look at him as like, okay, well, he's no longer our problem at this location. He transferred. Who cares? But the reality of it is you're keeping the same individual who is causing all these issues retained as an employee within this government agency. So there's no centralized governance over the employees, especially when they transfer out to other VAs. And some of these guys who I know of one case through a contact of mine who indicated to me that there was a VA police officer who was also a military reservist, found out that they may get terminated, that they were going to be proposed a termination. They ended up somehow going on deployment, but during that deployment, they secured a transfer to another VA facility, so that termination no longer can become an effect. People don't look at the game that's being played by some of these employees, whether it's an officer or not. They don't look at some of these games that they play where they manage to skid away from being disciplined because of a simple transfer.
We've seen that to directors being transferred.
Yeah.
And these people that I'm referring to without dropping names are police officers, and then they subsequently get promoted because of their history is not looked into. And then the worst part about this is also the hiring practice of police officers, because the background for police officers within the VA system, as embarrassing as it is to say, is childish. It is very, very, very ridiculous. They don't do a thorough background for these guys and gals that they're hiring to be cops who are entrusted with the public trust and carry firearms and to go around and make arrests and protect the property and protect the veterans. They don't do thorough background checks on some of these guys. Personally, I've done a background check that's as thorough as any state agency in the nation, and I have found things in one person's record that would make your jaw drop, and you're like, how is this person even a cop to begin with? All the way from being fired from one VA, from being kicked out of the military, from being fired and sued by a former employer for creating a hostile work environment. From suing other employers for a variety of reasons. And coincidentally, this guy is at West LA. He got promoted to lieutenant. And on top of that, he turned around and got one of his former employers hired at the VA as a police officer. So the person that he worked for and he sued, he helped him get hired at the West LA VA. And right now the biggest issue that's going on at the West LA VA that HR is claiming they can't do anything about is that a lot of the applicants that are being hired are either friends or buddies of, in one capacity with this off with this specific police officer, and they're getting hired under a Schedule A qualification because he's been aiding them and teaching them on how to go get a Schedule A diagnosis in order to qualify for the announcement.
Good old boy network.
Yeah,
and it works, and some of these guys are getting hired, and this guy pushes the hiring for these individuals. One of the guys that recently got hired, to my understanding, had a had something in his background involving some kind of fraud. But the rumor mill right now has it that this specific officer went and pressured HR to push his application and to clear him in his background. And they did, and they hired him. Now he's a cop. No state agency would ever hire somebody under those conditions, but yet the VA would. No other federal agency would hire somebody under those conditions, but the VA does.
Yeah, it speaks to a lack of standard. There's a method of doing this, and it's insert tab A into slot B. It is just that simple. But the fact of the matter is, at some point in time, Congress, in their infinite wisdom, made the VA a cabinet-level agency. Now, it took me a while coming, you know, I'm a state officer before I came to the VA. So it took me a little bit to get my head around some of the federal systems. And this was one that just blew me away, and it still does, that as a VA police officer, I'm on the same tier as an FBI agent, right? The Department of Justice can't tell me how to do my job. They can make suggestions, but I'm a cabinet level, I work for a cabinet level agency. So what that means in this issue of background checks and how we're conducting onboarding and looking at other officers, even disciplinary aspects, is that the standard that we see in almost every other capacity as we look around us, the VA just simply doesn't have to do. There's no compulsion of law that says, like, OPM could step in and say, look, we have to do this level of background because these are law enforcement officers and this is the public's expectation. They might do that. They might even have done it. But the VA's response to that could be and probably would be, we don't care. Make us. Right?
Well, one of the things that normal law enforcement, FBI and all that you've brought up, has to go through is a mental evaluation. Does that not happen with the VA?
It does with us. It's probably the only decent part of our onboarding. We do the Minnesota multiphasal.
Uh-huh.
And out here in Seattle, we go to a forensic psychologist who does that. Now, if you've been to one VA, you've been to one VA. Because Greg Childs will tell you the guy that did his was a clinical psychologist. So he didn't know what he was looking at. And then they let him dig around in Greg's background in an inappropriate way and use stuff that had nothing to do with his capacity in being a law enforcement officer to then terminate him. So, again, the standard isn't enforced on the VA broadly. Seattle's been doing it right for a couple of years, but we may be the only one. I don't know.
Like at West LA, I'll tell you this. When I got hired, the person that did the psych eval for me was a clinical psychologist. It was one of the psych doctors that actually sees the veterans for whatever mental issues that they have. That was the person that cleared me psychologically to come on board at the time. This was back in 2009. But now West LA starts sending people out to one of the psych offices that they're contracted with to perform the psychological evaluation for new hires.
Right.
And that didn't start, that didn't start until, I think, 2013.
Right, right.
Well.
And so a lot of this falls on central office, to some degree, a very minor degree, but our law enforcement training center. But the vast majority of it rests squarely on the shoulders of the folks at central office. And this stuff has been brought up before, right? There's a degree of both arrogance and incompetence that's melded together at levels really far up our food chain. And it's staggering, especially for somebody like me who comes from the outside, who's I'm used to folks in certain positions having some gray matter between their ears. You know, guys, they're pretty smart.
Right.
I may not agree with them all the time. They may come up with certain conclusions or policies or tact on doing things that I'm like, I would not do that, or I think it's stupid. But I can understand where they're coming from. I get how they got there, right? Most of these guys, I think they've just spent too much time watching Law and Order or something. I don't know where they get this stuff.
Well, I think a bigger percentage of it is arrogance than you putting across.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I agree with you.
And then the other issue with this whole thing is that we're one of the few, if not only agency, especially to our capacity and to our level, that doesn't polygraph.
Yeah.
Now, I understand that the polygraph is a tool.
Yes.
But even though most agencies, you know, municipal or federal or state, they you know use it as gospel. But we're one of the few. We're the only agency that I know of that does not polygraph at all. You want like here? I'll give you an example. How do they conduct their backgrounds? Most agencies, they'll physically go to your former employers and look at your personnel file and look at your training record. Most agencies will go to your neighbors. They'll go to your family.
Uh-huh.
They'll go to your references. The VA makes the call over the phone. Hey, you know, I'm calling from here, so on and so forth. You know, just wanted to ask you a few questions. I know this for a fact because I was physically standing next to the HR rep when I got hired, who made the call to my references right in front of me. One of my references didn't answer, so I texted them. I said, hey, they're about to call you. Answer the phone. And then they did. It was an HR rep that was checking out my references, and they don't physically go to your employers. So, for example, one of the guys that I know of, and by saying one of the guys, most of these references, I'm referring to one specific person, but one individual who had previously told me that all the VAs he transferred from and to other VAs, you know, when he bounced around from one VA to another, what he would do is he would put something on his application, whether it's real or not. He put something on his application, and then he would put references that he knows that the VA is going to call, and those references will verify whatever he asked them to verify that he indicated on his resume. So even if that resume was falsified, they don't know any better because they're not physically going to those employers and checking them. And this guy has openly admitted this to me, and he's admitted it to Greg. So it's like at what point, you know, like when you look at the quality of the applicants that we're seeing VA-wide, especially at West LA, it was not what it used to be. Like it has gone downhill.
Yeah.
Well, and originally our job, I think, was billed for retired cops, guys like me, right? You retire from the state system. All the sharp edges are worn down. You're a little maybe slower to act and quicker to think about what you're seeing. And so arguably easier to deal with the patient population. And going into the federal system, you then get to go into a different retirement system and all that stuff. So it's, they were trying to market us to that archetype. But what happened is the benefits are horrible. The pay is horrible. It's like 1970s stuff. So, who would come do this when you can go do courtroom security and things like that. So what happened was they had to open it up to folks who, largely younger guys getting out of the military. And again, there's nothing wrong with that. I'm still in the Army Reserve. I started my law enforcement career in the military. It's great stuff. But that guy or gal who's done 4 years in the active duty gets out. That archetype, you have to train. You've got to mold. You've got to give experience to and opportunities to get those sharp edges worn down. Our training concept was built around that retiree, not the new person.
Right.
And so a lot of these systems like the background checks, the training requirements, all of these things, part of the reason why they're falling short is that that detail hasn't been shorn up. But again, this is it's an issue of gross mismanagement. This isn't rocket science. They've known about it for decades, and they just failed to address the issue.
And to piggyback right off of that a little bit, and here, along with some of the comments that Tim has previously made, they have, unfortunately, the ability to sit there in their cushy little desks and say, hey, VHA doesn't let us do these things. So they're always finding a way to point the finger back at, you know, the VA as a system, forgetting that there's three fingers pointing back at them, because they don't want to acknowledge, like, hey, we have the ability to push for this, but yet we're not doing so, so we're just going to take the easy way out and blame the VA. Okay, but as a result of doing that, what are you accomplishing? And then as far as, like, Tim was said, you know, what Tim said with regards to, like, the training, we all, you know, we still lack appropriate and proper training. I mean, when I started, it was a five-week academy, then it increased, I think, to eight. Tim can correct me on that one, and then it's now at 10 weeks. But even that 10 weeks is still not sufficient enough to train an individual, say, for example, who's been hired under Schedule A, who's never had law enforcement, doesn't have the knowledge, doesn't have experience, doesn't have anything related to law enforcement in their background. 10 weeks is not appropriate enough to train somebody on law enforcement, especially at an academy, especially at an academy where they refuse to answer questions during law week that's specific to law. And I can give you an example for that one. Again, some of my references was from when I went to the academy. I know things have changed, but even guys till today who come back from the academy, they say that they came back dumber than when they went. For one example, this is how bad it is. One of our training instructors, he was the head of the training facility at the time when I went to the academy, he made a comment in front of the entire class, and John Moline was present for that, and he's a witness, and he'll attest to this. He was saying that the VA is known to hire felons. Nothing wrong with that, okay? No. That they're known for second chances and hiring felons as long as they've had a clean record for 5 years. This is what was said at the time. So if somebody who hasn't had any felony convictions for the last 5 years, that's considered a clean record for the VA, that they'll bring them on board. And the reference that this guy made, he said, so technically, if Charles Manson were to be released today, he can apply to be a VA cop and he can get hired because he's been clear of felonies for the last 5 years because he's been in prison the whole time. So then I raised my hand and I said, well, how is that possible when he's a felon? Felons are not allowed to possess firearms. That instructor got pissed, stormed out the room, and we didn't see him for the remainder of the academy time. So when you have one of your head instructor at the lesson training center telling you that Charles Manson can be a VA cop, what does that say to everything else that comes out of their mouth from there on forward, and to include the actions and how they've been operating with the hiring standards?
Wow.
Well,
has joined us.
Oh, good.
Who joined us?
He's hiding back there in the wing.
Oh, yeah, he's back there.
You there, Greg?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right.
Can you hear me?
Yep. We got you.
Greg's here. I'm leaving.
Lovely. Little delay going, but I'm on. So I don't know what I missed. But I don't know if you guys got any questions or anything. I'm basically still where I'm at right now and just waiting to hear what's going to go on with my case. But I will tell you, I just sent another letter to Secretary of the VA last week and never heard anything once again, so it's the hide and go seek. And same old thing with OAWP. Seems like every time they get involved, something comes and bites me in the rear end, so I'm getting kind of hesitant about working with them. But otherwise, that's about it.
Yeah, guys, I was at the beginning, during my last interview with you guys, I sat here and spoke semi-highly of OAWP regarding what they did, okay, and then you guys told me, hey, give us an update when you come back. Well, here's my update. They reinstated my stay the same week that they – so January 14th, they OAWP closed out my stay. They lifted the stay, and I was supposed to be terminated as of January 19th. On January 18th, on my way to the VA to check out, I get a phone call from senior advisor of OAWP telephonically saying, hey, dude, your stay has been reinstated. We just don't know the mechanics as to how this is going to be conducted, but somebody should be reaching out to you shortly. I said, okay, but I never got that in writing. So then February 21st was when I conducted my interview with the two investigators that were assigned to my case. And we went over everything, and I sent them all my file during that week. 2 weeks later, and keep in mind, I have an open workman's comp case since January 24th, but 2 weeks later, after they interviewed me, the day that I left the country to go on vacation to China for 2 weeks was the day that OAWP closed out my case again without notifying me, and I came home to a letter of termination that was effective March 12th. So basically, while I was on vacation, I got terminated, and that's on top of while having an active open workman's comp case. So I did some contacting to several people, and I got a hold of, like, I guess the senior director of, like, investigations or something of that nature, some fancy title. And I told the gentleman, I'm like, hey, you know, how is it that you guys closed out my case in 2 weeks, but yet I know for a fact that there's two other guys you guys interviewed a month prior to me, and their cases are still open. He indicated to me that they had reviewed my case over the course of a couple months, and that's why they made the decision. I told him, really? Because you got my evidence just 2 weeks ago, so how is that possible? So apparently nobody at that level within OAWP had actually reviewed my case to its full context. Now, this individual indicated to me that he was going to review my entire case in its entirety, and that it would take some time and he would get back to me. But he did tell me, hey, you know, but continue whatever process you're trying to address this issue in, because so that way I don't lose out on my timing, like with MSPB and so on and so forth. But the bottom line is, I'm sitting here, you know, I got fired while I'm on vacation, and I have a workman's comp case. So you guys are closing out my case a second time, and you're claiming that you reviewed my case over a couple months, but yet you haven't reviewed my entire case after I submitted my evidence to you. And the issue with these investigations is that they're being conducted by HRLR individuals. They're not even certified investigators. They don't have that investigative knowledge because, for example, I told them initially, hey, this interview is going to have to take about 3 to 4 hours so we can go over everything. And it was all telephonic, by the way. It wasn't even face-to-face. They said, well, usually we restrict these things to about an hour, hour and a half. Okay, so as an investigator, I happen to know for a fact that when I'm investigating issues, either administratively or criminally, the investigation doesn't stop until it stops. You don't choose when you want to cut it, because if there's something more that you need to pursue, then you need to pursue it. But that's not what they're doing. They're limiting the scope of their investigations explicitly to your complaint, and that's it. And they're not even reviewing everything in its entirety within your complaint either, as it was in my case. They only asked me questions pertaining to the action that the agency was proposing against me. They didn't ask me a single question or to produce a single piece of evidence related to all the other topics that was in my initial disclosure. So what investigation are you conducting when you're acquiring my evidence and my arguments, and then you're turning around and taking it to regional counsel to try to argue, hey, this is what this guy has? So you're sharing my cards basically with regional counsel, who's there to protect the agency. You're sharing my evidence with them, and then now you're leaving me out to dry and say, hey, you know what, you don't have nothing, or we're not gonna, you know, further pursue this. You don't even give me a heads up. You don't even give me a copy of anything at all. You haven't provided me a single document. So right now, in order for me to get all the OAWP stuff, despite the fact that I've already filed a FOIA on it, I have to we're basically, my attorney has submitted through MSPB a motion for discovery related to all OAWP documentation, because OAWP hasn't given me anything. I submitted my request over a month and a half ago.
Are you still currently terminated on their record?
Yeah, I am, as of March 12th. Oh, and then that was another cute little thing that happened too. apparently they sent me the letter to my house via UPS, but I was out of the country. But yet, my roommate was able to get it, to get a copy of that letter to accept it for me from the UPS distribution center, simply because he had the sticker that they leave on your door. Hey, we attempted to deliver something to you. So his ID wasn't even checked. So I was never officially served with anything until I came home and saw that it had been accepted on my behalf by my roommate. Well, you can't do that because you actually have to make sure that I'm the one that signed for it. So I have to go to HR and get that corrected, and they had to change the termination date to March 18th based on the facts that I just explained to you.
And that may be, I think, of significant interest to any of your listeners or maybe to you yourself, that VA police are often told that regional counsel is the legal authority, not the United States Attorney's Office. So a lot of cops at the boots level, right? These guys, like I mentioned earlier, the archetype. This kid, you know, goes to the military, comes to work for us, goes to our training center, comes back to work. And then some poor vet who is running afoul of the VA, they get into some sort of interaction, and that cop, that boots level cop, has been told something by regional counsel that's akin to what Goose just described. Now, that cop doesn't know, young guy or gal, doesn't know how to parse that out. He's going to do what he's told. And so a lot of the stories we hear coming back from the public that to me are truly horrific, right? And that I would absolutely characterize as misconduct by VA police officers is born out of an instruction from regional counsel.
And the issue the issue that goes with that is the fact that each district has certain rules that are different than others. And then each state has different rules that are different than others. That's why during law week, they pretty much wouldn't answer any question, and they would constantly say, well, you have to fall back upon the district in which you reside or in which you work, or you have to fall upon the state laws in your area or the municipal codes in your area. That's why they can't give us any answers. And so the problem is when we're enforcing certain laws, if they're not on the federal sector, then we fall back upon the state sector. So we enforce the state laws when the law is not on the books on the federal side. But then you have Letzi and guys like investigator Lamb saying, oh, well, you can't enforce state laws because of this, and this. Well, your training center is telling us that we can because of that and because of the assimilated acts, among other things. So you're telling us we can't. The training facility is saying that we could. Our local training division is saying that we can. You know, we have letters from, you know, like memorandum of understandings from like the AUSAs who will tell us, hey, we don't want to any of these cases. You can refer them to the state. So by that, we have to utilize the state codes because the AUSA is reject to take certain crimes. So, but then you're going to turn around and tell us that we can't do that. I'll tell you how bad it was. One time, and this was when former chief Ed Casey was the chief of police at West LA, I actually stopped a person who was in possession of a stolen vehicle. And I was ordered to release him, but to take the car and to release him because I was unable to contact the owner to identify that he did in fact have permission to drive the vehicle or not. But the investigation led to the fact that, and the guy admitted, yeah, I took the car without permission. He straight up admitted it. But yet I was ordered to release it because the chief at the time said, well, that's a state law. It's not on the federal books, and we can't enforce that. So you're telling me I have to release a felony car thief right here because you're claiming that I can't enforce that law based on something that he stated was an instruction that came from Letzi and from OSNLE. But yet he refused to put that in writing.
And it's kind of a sad story that I think is maybe a little more shocking. we had a gal here named Sebelita Hawkins, who was a nurse, and she had something called postpartum psychosis. And she turned violent. She corralled all of the patients in the ward, the staff in the ward, in a room that they used to hold controlled substances. And when myself and another officer got up there, she was battering down the door with a scanner fax machine that she had ripped out of the wall. She wrestled me and this other officer about 5 or 6 minutes. And it was one of those moments where, as a cop, I thought I was going to get injured badly. And long story short, we were told to release her for exactly the reasons that Goose are talking about. I was a brand new officer at the VA. And my supervisor said, do that. So that's what we did. Ms. Hawkins went home and violently assaulted her mother so seriously that she lacerated the woman's tongue through the outside of her face with a butter knife.
Oh.
We work at a hospital, right? We
right.
have the capacity, the unusual capacity to treat postpartum psychosis, to diagnose it and to treat it. And Sebelita Hawkins was a veteran on top of it. And yet we were ordered to release her. Every criminal act that Sebelita Hawkins committed from that point that we let her go is on the back of the VA. And they've never been held accountable for that. And when you, in fact, and I have this in writing from other chiefs where I recount that case to them in the light of this specific conversation, and they tell me, if that comes up in the future, you do the same thing. Right? My response to them in writing is no, not no, but heck no. And if you're going to discipline me for it, do it now. Because I'm telling you, I will never violate the public's trust like that. So it's a peculiar element that we live in, work in at the VA, where we have to know our jobs better than those people who supervise us and act accordingly. And then on top of it, get called, narcissistic or whatever, because we have the internal fortitude to look at those people in positions over us and tell them no.
To include the fact that we have the knowledge and the experience and the education and the training beyond what the VA provides that allow us to perform our duties per the letter of the law. And
right.
they still want us to turn around and say no. A primary example is right now what's going on at West LA is, and this has been relayed to me by several officers, even before my termination, because this was an issue that I was dealing with, and that was one of the premise of my whistleblower activity. We had veterans who don't qualify under the legal hold criteria, which is the psychological 5150 hold in the state of California. You're either homicidal, suicidal, danger to self, others, or gravely disabled. Those are the five criteria. We have veterans who are, if they're being treated at the VA, at the West Los Angeles VA, where at some point or another, if they're being treated medically, not psychologically, they at some point go through some kind of a mini psychological evaluation. And what I uncovered was that the psych department was putting notes in the system along the lines of that the veteran has diminished capacity or lacks the capacity to go AMA, which is against medical advice. In the event that the vet tries to elope, then contact the SMART team. The SMART team is comprised of individuals on duty who are there to help staff members with patients who are on psychological hold. So this system is being severely abused. So whenever a veteran tries to go AMA that has that note in there, they'll contact the SMART team. And the SMART team, what they were doing is they were physically getting involved against these veterans where they would take them and drag them back to their room and restrain them against their will when they have no legal basis to do so. Under California law, that falls under false imprisonment kidnapping based on their actions. Or if you're preventing someone's free-flowing movement, disallowing them from being able to freely move or leave, or like putting your foot in the door of an elevator, preventing it from closing so that the vet can't leave, that all qualifies in there. I had one psych doctor who straight up admitted to me that she put a vet on hold because her supervisor ordered her to, so that they can help the staff to prevent the vet from leaving, and he didn't fit the criteria for it. And she's still licensed till today. So basically, these guys, some of these vets are being victimized by the VA. Now, where I'm getting at here is that apparently recently, regional council stated, oh, yeah, it's okay for VA cops to help staff to prevent veterans who are not on hold to leave because of this alleged medical hold that nobody ever has ever seen. So they're claiming that there's a medical hold process that covers VA police. But when you look at the medical hold criteria under California law, police is not mentioned in there. Medical hold is a medical staff concern, not a law enforcement concern. So the chain of command is now telling the officers, hey, you guys need to prevent these guys from leaving if they're on a medical hold. And there's been and a lot of the cops have been like, no, we're not going to do that, because now we're going to be held civilly liable for kidnapping these individuals. And
let's
we're
let
not
jump in there.
Allowed to touch them.
Yeah, let me jump in there, Goose. Memorandum.
Hold on, Tim, hold on. And the reason why people are saying no, that's because the chain of command is claiming that regional council said, yes, you can do this, but no, legally you cannot do that. So they've always been trying to find a way to maneuver around the law to force VA police to help prevent veterans from leaving. And that's – I just wanted to piggyback right off of that for what Tim said regarding regional council, because they do say, yeah, regional council is end-all be-all. No, they're not, because there's general council as well, and then there's local attorneys as well.
So, Goose, there's a couple things
go
you got wrong there, and we're on the air, so we got to clarify it. That memorandum came from general council, not from regional council. The reason that's significant is what Goose was just said about the hierarchy between general council in D.C. and where they sit over the regional councils, which are each individual local VA, the region that local VA belongs to. Now, the memorandum that Goose is talking about was authored by a temporary general counsel lawyer who's no longer employed by the VA. So she came in, she offered this document that essentially said cops can change hats, which is ridiculous. If you know anything about law enforcement, then that gives me the power to search your car or your belongings and say I was searching you as a general employee of the hospital, not as a cop, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Which is – that's incorrect. Yeah, there's this thing called the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution that sort of says, you know, you can't do that pesky stuff, that Bill of Rights. And the only way I can think of that any board-certified attorney – would ever say anything of the kind was if she, and this was a she, knew she'd never be held accountable to that memorandum. It flies in the face of every sense of legal propriety that somebody would expect. And it's a gross violation of miscarriage of justice. But at the end of the day, general counsel is like your family attorney, right? They're the advisor to the hospital. They are not the Department of Justice, the United States Attorney's Office, or anything of the kind. So they can give you opinions all day long to some degree or other. And as a law enforcement officer, you have the expectation of looking at that document and going, well, general counsel, regional counsel, I'm glad to know you think that. You do that. You do your memorandum. I'm going to go do what I know to be right. Goose is operating under 5150 in California. In Washington State, we have a similar state law like Baker Act in Florida. There's also this thing called the 10th Amendment to the Constitution that says you as a United States citizen have the luxury of going through your daily affairs with the expectation that you are more or less going to be treated like you've always been treated, right? So how things go in your state, which is where you chose to live – and reside and be treated under that certain auspice, you have the expectation for that to continue. So as a law enforcement officer, anything not addressed under federal law that I might assimilate under 18 USC or otherwise conduct myself or comport myself in the state of Washington, I'm still covered under the Washington Administrative Code. And this is a peculiarity to the state of Washington, that they view us as peace officers, right? So if I have to detain them, if I'm honestly concerned about someone's mental state, as was the case with Sedalita Hawkins, I can detain that person as if I were a state officer under state law for those concerns, because Sedalita Hawkins is a resident of the state of Washington. There is no federal law that addresses mental holds. And I have to make a call at time and place with exigent circumstances resulting in that person's safety and security, right? Now, most of that – yes.
Tim, one sec. Just to piggyback off of one specific thing he just said, at West LA, cops who know how to conduct a 5150 hold, they were
right.
We used to do the 5150 holds ourselves, similar to how Tim is explaining. But in recent times, like in the last couple of years, especially after I started bringing all these things to light, the chain of command said that, hey, Letzi no longer wants us to conduct 5150 holds, saying that we're not allowed to do so. Our local chain of command constantly says, Letzi, Vaco. They're the ones that don't want us to do any of this stuff, but they don't put anything in writing. It's all verbal because they know that
right.
some of us have contacts in those areas where we can reach out and say, hey, is this true that you don't want us to do this? And 99% of the time we get an answer of, well, you have to refer back to your chain of command. Well, they're not giving me the answer. That's why I'm coming to you. And we don't get the answer. The other thing to add on to what Tim said, Tim is correct for clarifying everything. What I explained was predominantly what was being explained to the officers at West LA, because that was the info that was being distributed to everybody. But
right,
Tim's providing a better elaboration on how it actually is and should be.
Okay, guys, I'm going to have to butt in here. We are out of time. obviously, there's a whole lot more to be covered here. We could do another show easily. And do a follow-up on see what's happening with your cases. But for tonight, we're going to have to cut it short.
Roger that.
Ivan had to leave because he's got some legal issues going on himself. So I would like to thank all of you for being on. I invite you to come on again and you know, continue this.
And thank you so much as well for the time and space. And I'm an open book. Anytime you can have us, please and thank you.
All right. Well, thank you guys a lot.
All right. Thank you.
Yes. You bet.
Take care.
Have a good night.
All right, you
thank
too.
You, guys.
Bye-bye.
I didn't even notice what time it was.
Yeah, he had to leave. He had some stuff going on. I don't even have a quotable quote for tonight. So I will just say good night to everyone. Thank all of you guys for being on. And we will see you next week.
Yep. Good night, everybody.
Yep. Have a good night.